This is Dan Friedel, and for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, welcome to the November 8th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. We've got a packed show for you tonight, so let's get right to it. We're joined now by my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten, who has this story about Formula One's attempt to stage a Grand Prix in Hanoi, Vietnam, in 2020. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. On Wednesday, this post appeared on Formula One's official Twitter page. F1 is excited to announce we will be racing in Vietnam in 2020. The country will host its first Grand Prix in April of that year. Formula One chairman Chase Carey was in the capital city, Hanoi, where he gave Vietnam the green light.
We've made it a goal and a priority for us to try and host Formula One races in what we believe are the most exciting and dynamic cities and countries around the world.
The Vietnamese Grand Prix will be raced along streets west of Hanoi. Borrowing from other world-famous tracks, the proposed layout will be around 3.5 miles in length and feature 22 turns. Chase Carey is confident the circuit track will not only test drivers, but thrill fans as well.
Yeah, I think it's a great addition to the mix, and I think we've really gotten a track that will be great for racing, great for competition, and really a great experience for the fans who are there.
Vietnam's Grand Prix is Formula One's newest race and the fourth race to be held in Asia, alongside Singapore, Japan, and China. Vietnam does not have a long-standing tradition with motorsports. However, the market is growing, and sponsors have agreed to a multi-year deal to stage the event. Chase Carey hopes Formula One's newest addition will help the sport grow in popularity throughout Asia.
You know, Asia's in really many ways the growth engine of the world today. We have races, great races here in Asia, in Japan, China, Singapore. But it is clearly a growing and increasingly important part of the world, and so to be able to add this race in Asia is also very important to us.
The Vietnamese Grand Prix will race on the 2020 calendar alongside Monaco, Singapore, and Azerbaijan. As for 2019, there will again be 21 races on the calendar, with the same races from this year retaining their places. And that's all from me, Dan. Back over to you.
Thank you, Gwen. Next up, a contribution from our friend Jim Stevenson, whose The Game Room podcast recaps the week in tennis, golf, a milestone in the National Football League, and also gives us some insight into the challenges of being a non-white ice hockey player here in the United States.
It means the world to me. It's one of the biggest titles in my career so far.
It's just the fourth professional tennis title in the five-year career of Russian Karen Khachanov, and the Paris Masters is definitely his biggest, coming against the amazing Novak Djokovic of Serbia, 7-5, 6-4.
I couldn't be happier to finish the season like this, you know, to win the last tournament of the season, especially Masters 1000 against Novak Djokovic, world number one in the world, so that's all explanation.
Djokovic had a chance to tie Spaniard Rafael Nadal with a record-matching 33rd Masters title. Despite having the most indoor Paris tournament titles with four, Djokovic would not pin his loss on seeming a bit drained after surviving an epic three-hour semifinal against Swiss great Roger Federer.
All the credit to him. He deserves it. He's a young player, up and coming, but already established player, top player, and he showed great quality today, and he showed why we're going to see a lot of him in the future.
He was impressed with the young Russian style.
From back of the court, flat backhands and forehand, it can really hurt you. You know, that's a big weapon in serve. I mean, serve is really, really strong and precise. So his overall game was really, really great all week.
Djokovic, this year's Wimbledon and U.S. Open champion, heads to the season-ending ATP Finals in London with much to enjoy.
I'm satisfied, of course. I'm going to be number one tomorrow officially, and what more can I ask for? I mean, I won 20-plus matches in a row and had the most amazing last 5 months of the year, so I'm getting into season finale with a lot of confidence and feeling good about my game. Hopefully, health-wise, physically, I'll be fine in a week time when it all starts in London.
While his season is over, Khachanov will embark shortly on his next one, as he did this year.
The same goals as it was for this year, to try to finish as high as possible, to keep working with my team, with my on my game, to try to improve day by day, to be competing against guys like Novak on the biggest tournaments more consistently.
He's the GOAT, the greatest of all time, at least in the eyes of New England Patriots fans, and perhaps everyone else too. Tom Brady has done it all, and in many cases, more often than any other quarterback in National Football League history. A 5-time Super Bowl champion, 4-time Super Bowl Most Valuable Player, 3-time NFL MVP, 13 Pro Bowl appearances, and the list goes on. Let's add, first NFL player in history to amass more than 80,000 yards, a record broken during the Patriots' 31-17 win over the Green Bay Packers.
I mean, these are all team awards. I certainly can't throw it to myself. I've got so many great teammates, guys blocking and coaches coaching, and this is a great team sport, so I just see those as all great team awards. I'm happy someone from the Patriots has it, and the fact that I get to play quarterback is pretty great for me.
Modest as always, Brady seemed unaware he had reached the milestone as he spoke with the media following the game.
For career yards passing?
Total yards, passing, rushing, etc.
Rushing. Yeah. I went backwards tonight a few times, so I need more videos, I guess, from my Instagram guys.
Justin Rose of England needed an extra hole to beat Li Haotong of China after a back-and-forth finish to win the Turkish Airlines Open golf tournament.
It was a fun battle. Obviously, I got myself 2 ahead with a few to play. Haotong made a wonderful eagle there at 15. You know, the 16th, we both were right in there tight, and, you know, I kind of got my nose in front again.
Despite carding a 2-under-par eagle to help him tie Rose at 17-under-par, Li was overtaken by good putting.
Well, it's a tough day. For me, I think I've been playing well this whole week, but just didn't hold a few putt on the last. That was it.
Rose had won the event last year, and this win marks the first time in his 20-year career that he has successfully defended a title.
It's taken me a long time to do it. Maybe I haven't won enough tournaments to give myself enough opportunities to defend, but, you know, you often, you know, this golf course obviously suits my eye, and when you do find a golf course that does suit your eye, you feel like you should give yourself a few opportunities to win there. So, but to do it back-to-back was very special this week.
Spaniard Adrian Otegi missed the playoff by 2 shots, even with an adaptation that greatly helped to lower his score.
I changed my putting grip, and that gave me a little bit more, more feeling and more rhythm. So I putted really, really good today.
And the overall result?
6 birdies, no bogeys is always a very good way to finish.
Also 2 shots outside the playoff was Thomas Detry of Belgium, whose strong play was helped by not playing.
It shows how important rest is, you know. I wasn't playing that bad of a golf a few weeks ago, but I just needed 2 weeks of rest, you know, to have a fresh mind and a fresh swing. And yeah, I got here with a fresh mind, fresh body, and that's what happened. So top 3 and pretty good, pretty happy.
Along with earning a repeat champion status, Justin Rose also regains bragging rights as the world's top-ranked golfer.
That's just something to be proud of. It doesn't mean much. It doesn't give you much. It certainly doesn't give you any extra, you know, it doesn't make you 1-under par on the first tee next time you play. But it's just something to be proud of for sure.
European, Canadian, and American athletes dominate the sport of ice hockey. While it's unusual to see Asians skating among them, 3 Asian-American players have found their way to the University of Maryland's Division III ice hockey team. Audrey Widodo joins us to share their stories of overcoming and breaking stereotypes in a sport we'll see return to prominence in the region at the 2022 Beijing Games, the second consecutive Winter Olympics held in Asia.
Kun Do is a sophomore physics major who grew up in Ames, Iowa, which he says is practically in the middle of nowhere, and is currently on his second year playing on the team.
It's always fun representing your school and playing for your friends. Personally, I just want to become a better hockey player and play the best sport in the world with awesome, awesome guys.
Stephen Fan is a sophomore computer engineering major who grew up in Potomac, Maryland with Kevin Zong, who is a sophomore computer science major, and this year it'll be their first season with the team. They've all been playing ice hockey ever since they could walk, and Steven has noticed the lack of diversity in the sport.
I've been playing hockey for over 10 years. I see a lot of white people. Almost everyone's white.
Which is why Kevin experiences people being fascinated by the fact that he plays hockey, which makes his family proud.
My dad loves it. He always brings up, like, oh, you're an Asian playing hockey. That makes you special.
Steven could also say the same.
My dad is actually really passionate about ice hockey, and he supported me ever since I was a kid, so I'm really, really grateful for that.
For Cunny's family, it's a whole different story.
They hate how it's really expensive, but I held on. They also think it's really dangerous. They're always worried that I get injured, and I did get injured a couple times, but, you know, I think they were also very supportive about it because every game I played, they would always be there cheering me on.
Despite all the love and support from their families, when they're on the ice, helmets on, sticks in hand, their world is hit with a slap shot.
I grew up in the Midwest where there aren't a lot of Asian hockey players, and so I felt like I was discriminated at some points. I took on some racial slurs while on the ice.
Steven says that hockey is a game for intellectuals, and taking the high road will always get you those dubs.
I think that they just try to emotionally upset you and to make you play worse. But honestly, most of the time it makes you more angry and it makes you more aggressive, so it makes you faster, and that really doesn't help them.
All of them say that their college experience playing hockey so far has been a memorable one, and that the players they meet now have been the nicest ones in the sport.
I think everyone's grown up a lot. They know that the game comes first than trying to, you know, insult other people. Anyone can become a very good player, you know, regardless of race.
I think that, like, when we wear our jerseys, we're not just playing for ourselves and we're not playing for our races, but we're playing for each other, and that kind of transcends, like, race overall.
Through it all, these three have stuck together from their high school days in Wooten and now to their college years. And here in Maryland, they're now in a line. With Kun at the center, Stephen playing left wing, and Kevin on the right, they call themselves the Asian Line.
Check out Audrey Widodo's full story on SoundCloud, along with her other good work. The Game Room opens with new stories each week, or play anytime on voanews.com.
Thanks for that, Jim. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Next to some soccer. I spoke with the national soccer writer for a new sports website here in the U.S. It's called The Athletic. We're joined by Paul Tenorio, who's on his way to Europe to see a few big soccer matches in the next week. We're joined right now on the sunny side of sports. He's the national soccer writer for The Athletic. Paul is based in Chicago, but he's got a big trip coming up that he wants to tell us about. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Paul, where are you heading off to soon?
Well, I'll be headed to Europe. I'm going to England and then to Belgium. The U.S. national team have a couple friendlies going on here in the next week or so. But on Sunday, I'll be hopping on the train and headed from London to Manchester for the Manchester Derby.
So, Paul, we were just talking about our own personal exercise routines and the value of coaching. This Manchester matchup between Manchester United and Manchester City has two of the premier coaches in the sport. What are you looking forward to seeing out of Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola at the game coming up later on this week?
Well, I hope we get more of what we got from Jose yesterday against Juventus. Obviously, putting his hand to his ear after the game, you know, he had been hearing it from Juve fans the entire time, and I think that he's under a lot of pressure. Manchester United obviously has been underperforming, at least, you know, when you think about the expectations that come with that club and with a coach like Jose, who's won in so many different countries with so many different teams. And I think that it's starting to really get to Jose. I read this fantastic profile by Sam Borden, on ESPN about kind of the wear that you're seeing in Jose now, the wear and tear of it all. And maybe not enjoying things as much, but I think that only ramps up the drama because he's been constantly compared to Pep Guardiola when Pep was at Barcelona and Jose was at Real Madrid. And now we have it again here in Manchester. I don't think it'll be lacking passion. I don't think it'll be lacking any type of disdain because it's there. They don't like, I think, you know, Jose wants to beat Pep's teams, and, you know, Pep, I think, is a little more guarded about it, but you better believe he wants to win as well. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of drama.
I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young. You're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We're talking with Paul Tenorio about a handful of topics in the world of soccer. He's the national soccer writer for The Athletic. Paul, what do you think Jose Mourinho will leave behind in his legacy of coaching? I mean, he's such a kind of charismatic, enigmatic individual, polarizing in many of the cities that he's gone to. But his track record is so impressive, and also about, you know, the way he rose up through the ranks to become a coach of major international soccer teams. When he's finally decides to ride off into the sunset, what do you think we'll remember about him?
Well, I think that there's no doubt that you have to think of him as one of the greatest to ever do it. You're right. He's got a fantastic story of how he broke into coaching, starting off as a translator, working on a staff, eventually starting off as a head coach at Porto, winning the Champions League with Porto, which is just unheard of, really. Going to Chelsea, winning the Premier League three times there, going to Inter, winning another Champions League, then to Real Madrid, now Manchester United. His ability to win across different leagues and different countries is what stands out. I think he was innovative when he first started off, and now the struggle is to adapt, I think. I think, the game has certainly grown and adapted as it does. And, I think Jose is struggling to kind of measure his own legacy as he actively coaches. Does he want to be the same coach he's always been, or does he need to change? And I think there is this kind of pull right now between what he accomplished before and where he is now. We've seen him referencing his title several times to fans that have booed. So it's a complicated legacy in that he's a winner. One of the greatest to do it, winning across different leagues with different teams and different competitions. But he's also a divisive figure in his personality. The way he's handled the media, the way he handles and interacts with fans and with players, he certainly is, I think, always going to be a polarizing figure in this sport's history.
So, Paul, you mentioned that the next leg of your European tour is going to be to see the USA men's national team. As our audience knows, that the American team missed out on the World Cup over the past summer, and certainly some transition going on in the ranks of USA soccer. What are you looking forward to seeing from the USA team as they've got these couple friendlies coming up in the next part of the month? They're playing England and Italy before Thanksgiving. What are some of the characteristics of the team that you're interested in seeing, seeing develop a little bit, and seeing how some of these young players maybe can mesh kind of to take the torch into the next generation of international soccer for the U.S.?
Yeah, well, in some ways, the U.S. has been somewhat stuck in neutral in that it doesn't have its coach, right? The future coach of the national team still has not been named. On the other hand, there has been significant progress in the minutes played by the young core of players who are going to take the U.S. into the next qualifying cycle. And I think what's most exciting about this camp is Christian Pulisic is back in the national team. And he's only played one game since the World Cup failure. That was an uninspired performance in Philadelphia, in which it was very clear that he didn't want to be there. And so this is going to be one of the first real times, actually the first time, that we'll see Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, and Christian Pulisic on the field at the same time, potentially with forward Josh Sargent. Those are four players under the age of 20, all of whom are considered top prospects in this U.S. pipeline and in the U.S. team. And people are excited about seeing, especially McKennie, Adams, and Pulisic in midfield, believing that that is the trio of central midfielders that will lead this U.S. team forward to Qatar in 2022. So I think that's the most important thing to be watching in this camp. Do the three of them get on the field at the same time, and what does that look like? Everything else around it is, I think, a little bit less important, though. We are watching individual performance. Anthony Robinson, another young player, a young player in his early 20s trying to prove himself, struggled in two tough matches against Brazil and Colombia. You know, does he start to improve? Is he showing anything different when he's on the field, or does a veteran like Jorge Villafania step back into that starting role? So those battles are going to be going on all over the field, but I think the narrative in this one is going to be about those three big names, Adams, McKennie, and Pulisic.
So, Paul, as I mentioned, you're based in Chicago. You're heading off on this European trip. How excited are you for the trip? I mean, it's got to be a soccer writer's dream to get a chance to see some of these venues and get a chance to taste the atmosphere in person of European soccer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this will be my first trip to England, actually. So I'm quite excited. I'll be I get in on Saturday morning. I'm heading straight out to a game. I'm actually going to go catch a championship game at QPR. And then obviously the Manchester Derby. So I get kind of the nitty gritty of English football, and then the grandest stage of English football in a weekend. And watching the U.S. play England at Wembley is going to be a pretty cool experience, I think. And then, of course, you know, headed over to Belgium, somewhere where last time I was there, I was playing in a game as a young soccer player growing up. So I'm excited to get back there, spend a little bit of time. I'm going to be working on a couple feature stories in addition to the stories on the national team. So I'm excited about those stories and those opportunities. And, anytime you get to kind of dive into the culture of where soccer is king, it's exciting for a soccer writer. And as much as the sport is growing in this country, it can't measure to what it means around the world. And I'm excited to be there.
That's Paul Tenorio, the national soccer writer for The Athletic, a sports website here in the United States. We'll have more from Paul on Friday. And finally, ahead of this weekend's Athens Marathon, our friend Andy Edwards spoke with a women's contender, Rebby Chirono of Kenya. Welcome, Andy.
Rebby Chirono is one of the leading contenders for the women's title in Athens. And Rebby, you've run 2:33 in your career. Do you think you're in that kind of shape? Because the course record is 2:31. Do you think you have a chance of breaking it?
Oh, it depends with the weather tomorrow and the course. If it is summer or flat or hilly, it will depend. The time is a bit hard.
So you're aware that the Athens course is hilly. It's a tough course.
I've never been to Athens, but I'll try my best.
Where have you been training? Have you been training back at home in Kenya?
Yes, I've been training in Kenya in high altitude to 10. And it is a bit hilly, not bad. There is more hills than here.
Has training been going well for you?
Yeah, it has been going well.
So have you done any races in preparation for this marathon, or has it all been training?
No, I did a race in September in France, but it was a hissy race, and I won it with 2 hours 40 minutes, but I hope to get more time.
That was a marathon, so there's not been a lot of time, end of September to now, to prepare. Are your legs feeling fresh or tired after that marathon at the end of September?
Oh, it is. Yeah, I'm not feeling tired. I'm okay. Yeah.
Rebby Chirono, we wish you all the best for the Athens Marathon, the historic marathon on Sunday. Thank you, Rebby.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for that, Andy. That wraps up the November 8th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Justin Thwaites. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel, in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable.
Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London!
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
A trio of astronomers have discovered a star they say could be one of the oldest stars in the universe. They say at 13.5 billion years old, this low-mass star's body is mostly made up of just the elements created by the Big Bang merely 300 million years earlier. At its birth, scientists say only three elements, mostly hydrogen, helium, and a small amount of lithium, made up the universe. Elements heavier than the first three were created when the early stars exploded in supernovas. With each successive generation of stars, even more heavier elements, including gold and platinum, were created. The astronomers say it was unusual to find an ancient low-metal star in the same part of the Milky Way where our sun resides in. The oldest stars have been mostly found near the center of our galaxy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.